Gonna go, we're out of here. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Bye. Hugh Joseph and Michael Payne on FUBAR Radio.
Stay home and chill. Keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Hello, this is Joey Page, and I present The Joey Page Show, bringing you the best in new and alternative music on FUBAR Radio every Wednesday between 2 and 4. But you can listen to it whenever you like, because you're obviously not going anywhere. Make sure you stay at home, stay safe. Why not rearrange that kitchen drawer? Or sort through all those clothes that you've got to work out whether you're going to send to the charity shop or wear again at some point. And all these jobs can be done by listening to the huge back catalogue of my shows and all the other great ones on FUBAR. I hope you're staying well. I'm coming to you right now from my evil lair, where I'm working on loads of new ideas for the show and keeping my eye out for all the great new music that's going on. Stay safe. Stay safe, all you cool cats and kittens, and listen to FUBAR Radio, keeping you company through the coronavirus.
On FUBAR Radio.
I've got Jim Bob from Can't the Unstoppable Sex Machine with me. We're going to go straight into his iPod as well. We don't normally do that. We go straight into it immediately. Here we go. On Jim Bob's iPod. Happy with that first choice?
I'm very happy with that, yeah.
Lovely. Start off at the top by saying goodbye. It's always nice. Big Bay City Rollers fan?
I wasn't when I was, because they were, you know, I was sort of old enough to have been around, to have been sort of a young teenager when they were in the charts. So I wasn't then.
Right.
Because, you know, they were probably more of a girls band at the time, weren't they?
Do you remember everyone wearing the tartan and stuff?
Well, I remember them playing, they played in like a cinema where I lived.
Right.
And I remember them being chased down the high street. Well, I wasn't there, but I remember everybody talking about it.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, definitely, when, you know, when I was at school, God. Obviously.
I don't think that kind of band gets chased.
Yeah.
Chased by...
I've been chased in Japan.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What happened?
If you're going to be chased, that's the place, I think. You know, actually in a moving car with sort of half the audience running down the, in a traffic jam as well.
Really?
Yeah, it's quite exciting.
And was it after the gig?
Yeah.
So they were just like, they wanted more?
I don't know what they were. Either that or blood, isn't it?
Yeah. Never come back again.
They didn't look angry.
What's it like? Is it different gigging in places like Japan? I mean, I guess obviously it is, but like, is there...
Yeah, I haven't been for years, but it was sort of radically different to everywhere else, really, because the gigs were, you know... I'm probably sort of stereotyping all the Japanese gigs, but gigs we did anyway were either in sort of shopping centres,
right,
on the sort of 10th floor of a shopping centre.
Yeah.
Where there'd be a hotel there as well.
Yeah.
And they'd sort of start at about 6, and then they would finish at 8 o'clock.
Right.
And everybody would be thrown out. So they'd start, there wouldn't be any come and have a few drinks, hang around.
Yeah, yeah.
And all that stuff. No sport bands.
Right.
Just do the gig. And then throw everyone out, and then you just then have to sort of find something to do for the next 15 hours.
That's why they chased you down the street there.
Yeah, but it's still light as well.
Yeah, might as well.
But yeah, it's kind of weird. So yeah, that was different.
Back then, how regularly were you gigging at one point? Was it every single night?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
What years were we talking about?
We started in 87.
Yeah.
So around about sort of 1990.
Yeah.
Gigging sort of non-stop.
Yeah.
And then it just carried on until we got more successful, and then we carried on doing, and then it sort of starts to thin out a bit,
right?
You know,
do you get more selective?
I think you do. Like, you know, you do sort of 10 big gigs rather than 35 small gigs,
right? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That's nicer. Well, where did you, when you would choose places, what were the places you were narrowing it down to? Was it the bigger gigs or just the nicer gigs? Or
no, we probably did. I mean, they probably were the standard gigs then, but you know, they were. Now they're probably all. O2 Academies, but back then they were all called something else, you know, sort of large nightclubs or university sort of buildings and stuff like that.
Okay, so we're going to go back onto your iPod. I mean, in general, you feeling? I mean, you must feel fairly confident what's on your. I always think with musicians, you're probably not going to be embarrassed about what's on here.
I, you know, there's probably a lot of old stuff.
Yeah,
there's probably hardly any new stuff.
Right,
but I don't think I'm going to be embarrassed about anything on there. I don't think.
Well, let's see what the next song is, and we'll see if embarrassment happens. Racy.
I take it all back. You sure this isn't just fair to say?
Well, it's on shuffle. It's on shuffle, so yeah. You love it, mate.
Oh, I love Racy.
I see those looks you're sending me. Is this the way it's meant to be? It's something we should talk about. Just give me time to work it out. Some girls will, some girls won't.
Lovely key change at the end from Racy there. Some girls could be a Jeepster title.
I mean, I think that's the kind we sort of wanted to sound like that, but with a punk edge.
Yeah. But I don't know. You're saying the Racy don't have a punk edge, Jim Bob?
Well, maybe they do now.
Yeah. I would say that's from Jackie the Album, which both these songs so far have been from Jackie the Album.
Yeah, which is a bit worrying, isn't it?
Jackie might be a comic.
It's a girl's comic. It's also my girlfriend's name. That's not why it's on there.
Yeah, I was thinking it might be a nice, like a mix for her. But like a mixtape.
The whole show is just me doing a mix for her.
Have you ever made her a mix?
I don't know. I must have done. Maybe not. I don't know.
Maybe in the early days.
That's how we stayed together.
Yeah, well, you've never done a mix, so it's worked out.
Yeah. Don't know if I have. People still do that?
I do. I tell you,
not a Spotify list.
I love it. No, not a Spotify.
That doesn't count.
I have to make it all on my iTunes. But like,
you got to put a bit. You need a bit of effort, don't you?
Yeah. Right. Let's see what the next track is on your iTunes here. We're gonna see if it goes off the Jackie album. It has.
Oh, yes.
Happy with this? What makes a man? Charles as Namor. The best of.
My mom and I will live alone. A grand apartment is our home. In a fair home towers. At night I work in a strange bar, impersonating every star. I'm quite deceiving. The customers come in without and wonder what I'm all about. But leave believing. I do a very special show where I am nude from head to toe. After stripteasing, each night the men look so surprised. I change my sex before their eyes. Tell me if you can, what makes a man a man? Nobody has the right to be the judge of what is right for me. Tell me if you can, what makes a man a man?
What makes a man? By Charles Aznavour. How do you pronounce his name?
Aznavour.
That sound makes more sense.
Yeah.
Nice sound in Aznavour. What makes a man? Which you were saying is about being gay.
Yeah. It's in there, isn't it?
I'm only laughing because about being gay is such a basic way of putting it. It's about being gay.
It's about being gay in whenever he wrote it. You know, like God knows when that was, 30 years ago or something, when it probably wasn't. probably weren't a lot of people writing openly about that sort of thing.
Wait, where's he from?
France.
French singer. How did you hear about him? I've never heard that song before.
You've heard She, haven't you? The song.
I don't think I have.
She. I'm not going to sing it. It was a massive hit, and it probably people have done it as a cover version. Elvis Costello's done it. I think Ronan Keating did it for one of those not Four Weddings and a Funeral. One of those Notting Hill.
Peter Curtis one.
I think it's Notting Hill.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Richard Curtis.
Who did I say?
Peter Curtis.
That's not anyone, is it? Peter Curtis.
I've never heard of him.
No one's called Peter Curtis in the whole world. In fact, I mean, I don't even know why. I saw Richard Curtis this week on the tube, but I don't know why I'd even think Peter Curtis.
Were you in Notting Hill? Somewhere with the word Peter in.
I can't even remember where it was I saw him. It might have even been near Notting Hill and stuff, actually. But let's see if the next song. I mean, I'd love it if this went back to the album that the What Makes a Man song was from. Oh, here we go. Nick came with the bad seats.
Hey. It was back in 32 when times were hard. He had a Colt 45 and a deck of cards steady. I'm a bad motherfucker, don't you know? And I'll crawl over 50 good bushes just to get to one fat boy's asshole, said Staggerly. Well, Billy Billy dropped down and slobbered on his head, and Stig filled him full of lead. Boy.
Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Stagger Lee from Murder Ballads. Happy with that?
Yeah.
Relieved?
I mean, like I said, I wasn't sort of embarrassed by the other stuff.
No.
I wouldn't want anyone to think that I hadn't listened to anything since 1970.
Yeah, you do know other stuff. Nick Cave, of course, also a writer.
Yeah.
A musician.
Yeah.
Done films. Yeah. You ever thought about...
I have written a film script, but
have you?
It didn't get made.
What was it?
It was a short story I did. It was called Word Count.
Yeah.
It was set in the future where there's nobody to do the normal jobs. This is going to sound awful. I'm trying to remember what it's about. And so the only people who were allowed to make art,
yeah,
they were got picked on a sort of jury service style way.
Yeah.
So you get chosen, and he gets the main bloke, and he gets chosen to write a book.
Right.
He's never written anything.
Okay.
And so he has to, and he's struggling to write this book. And then, yeah. Other stuff happens.
Oh, quite good though. I like that.
There were people that, like Elvis Costello was in it, just sort of having to, because he's not allowed to, as an example, not allowed to make music, so he was doing it. There's like an underground scene of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're quite obsessed with Elvis Costello. Would he be your... Elvis Costello is one of your main...
Yeah, I'd say, it was probably, somebody that I was into when I was a teenager that I still listen to now.
Yeah.
All the time. In spite of what today is bring up.
Yeah.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
George the Poet, how is it going?
It's all good, man. How are you?
You've had an incredibly busy summer, haven't you?
Yeah.
You just told me you haven't even been on holiday.
No, I should have, man.
Yeah, you kind of look like you're regretting that now, but it's a good thing that you've been so busy.
Yeah, that's always a good thing.
Your single, which I think it's actually my favourite of all of your singles to date. What do you reckon?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What?
Because it comes at the perfect time.
Mm.
I'm a little bit slightly older than GCSEs, but I remember that feeling that it gave you at the time when you think, is this going to be the end of my life? Is this going to change everything? And it doesn't.
Yeah.
It can help you either way, even if you fail, even if you pass.
Mm.
If you want something, you take it. And I really felt that in the track.
I'm glad you felt that, man. Like, so obviously, when you're young, your life is your life. So people might want to just try and make you feel like it's not that serious, but it's hard for you to feel. But when you know the stories of other people that actually survived, it's easier.
That that's the thing. It's the survivors. It's that idea. But don't get me wrong. They should think they people should be scared a little bit because that fear kind of helps you, I think, in life. In anything you do, job interview, exam, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had a situation like that earlier today. I was under mad pressure, but I got the work done. And my
and now you feel amazing because it's like that weird buzzy feeling that you're like, oh my God, thank God.
Yeah, 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 definitely.
But I think it hits out at not just the teenagers, but also people in general. You could be 45 and wishing you'd done something you didn't do. You just go and do it, and then that's your life changed there. I feel like that's
yeah, I mean, like, part of the inspiration behind it was Brexit. Am I lying? No, I wrote it before Brexit. I had it in mind when I released it. I was like,
how can you not? The hideous...
You know, like, so I was like, listen, we have to move forward.
Yeah.
And we have to stay afloat. So, like, I reckon we could do it. Let's get on with it.
It's really exciting as an artist that you're dipping into these political situations and you're turning them into art, because I think a lot of young people and everybody generally in the world, people that are maybe too busy for politics, maybe not interested, or you know, doing it through music can open it up in such a different way that people kind of connect. Is that what your goal is? You know, because obviously you've got a keen interest in politics. Is that something that you're looking to do?
I mean, like, I'm pursuing this path as opposed to being in politics. When I was in uni, I thought I was going to go into politics. So while I am in this path, I need to satisfy that urge within me to affect the democratic process, which is what my new tour is based on. Like, I've got a model of engagement, which is like, if I talk about something, we are going to do something about it, which is how it all comes together. And that's what I want to do with my
The Search Party.
That's right. That's what The Search Party is about.
Yeah.
We search for the answers together.
I feel like also maybe there's still a chance for you to go into politics later down the line. You never know. Yeah, you might retire from music and become the next Prime Minister.
Potentially still.
I would feel pretty comfortable if you became Prime Minister, I'm not going
to
lie.
All right, well, I'm going to hold you to that. Don't let me down at the
time. No, I'm not letting you down now or then.
I might run independently. I don't want everyone to laugh and be like, you actually
believe
us.
I'll be your aide or whatever that they have.
I'll take that.
I'll be the worst aide ever because I know.
No, it's cool. We've got a pen. I'll get that in writing just after the interview. After the interview.
I'm going to make you sign that at the end. No, it's really exciting to sort of be part of that movement within sort of young people as well. You're inspiring people. Do your fans say that to you a lot?
Yeah, they say that a lot. And obviously, we are at a time where we're being forced to have an opinion on a lot of stuff. The minute I got into uni, you know, like, education fees were tripled. And we had protests. There's not protests at university ever. Well, there probably is. But that was the first time, that was my first experience of a protest in an education setting.
Yeah.
Because we're being forced to have an opinion on things that are affecting us right now. My friend's a doctor. They're going on strike in a couple of days. You know, like, he just became a doctor. And this is the world that he's entered. Because, you know, we are the generation that dealt with the financial crash. And we're looking at a lot of consequences. Yeah, man. So we better be awake.
So what's coming next? What's the next political sort of fuel for your fire? Like, what? I feel like I want to know what the next...
What I'm trying to do is get people to think about sustainable development. Obviously, that's just about the survival of our planet. There are certain things that we're doing, that we're used to doing, that we don't actually think about as life-threatening.
Yeah.
For example, gender inequality. That's a life-threatening issue.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't understand the value of a female life and how that can be expanded and how any oppression of that is an oppression of the world in general and our sustenance, then we're going crazy. Likewise, water shortage. We're heading to a situation in 2050 when half of global grain might not be here. So a billion people won't have access to basic things, you know? And if we ain't thinking about that, we're just going to sleepwalk into that situation. But luckily, you know, I got a microphone.
And it's really important that you keep talking that stuff on that microphone as well. And I'm loving your videos. I always love your videos. They're always a bit exciting, doing something interesting. Tell me, is there a video coming for What Do You Reckon?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Do we have any sneaky tidbits of what might happen, what the theme of the video might be?
No.
Not allowed?
No.
Not even maybe what colour your jumper is going to be that you wear?
No.
It's not going to be yellow, no?
Yes or no, and it's no.
Maybe, nothing, no. Nothing. Can't drag anything out. Well, we're really excited. Do you still get nervous when you perform, especially now you're doing something completely different?
Yeah, I get mad nervous. So nervous, like, all the time, but that's what keeps me alive, that's what keeps me going.
And what ritual do you have to kind of chill the nerves before you go on stage?
Push-ups.
Push-ups?
I just do like mad push-ups.
I can't even do a push-up, let alone do push-ups before I go on stage. I mean, not that I go on stage, but that is pretty impressive.
No, it's not impressive. It's just, it's like OCD. I have to do it.
Do you do it like, are you on your own in a room or is there loads of people with you?
I do weird things. Like I find an empty corridor. Like, and I'm just weird. And someone, I can hear someone coming. I'm just get up.
And yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you're just casually leaning against the wall. Amazing.
Push-ups? No push-ups here.
I really want to catch you pushing up. At some point before a gig, that would be sick. Well, this is a bit of a random question now. What would you say, honestly, is the best thing about what you do?
The best thing?
For you, in your heart, like, what's the real best thing about being George the Poet?
You're trying to get a cheesy answer out of me.
No.
Okay, so best thing about
saving the world. World peace.
Being able to keep people company when they need it.
That is a very good answer. Had you planned that? I promise I hadn't told him before now I was going to ask him that.
Yeah, yeah. When you record something, people can access it whenever they want. You don't have to physically be with them. And sometimes some, you know, forms of depression or mental illness can mean that no matter how many people are around you, you feel lonely unless you get the right kind of engagement, which people tell me they do from my work.
That is so amazing that people tell you that as well.
Yeah, man.
You must, like, have such a nice sort of relationship with your fans.
Everyone says their fans are the best because it's, like, you know, a way to make people happy. But I never say this, but my fans are the best. Like, I've never felt put off or, like, imposed upon. Everyone comes up to me and has a very respectful, loving conversation. So we got all of my listeners, man.
I'm one of those, so I'm probably not as nice as all of them, but
this has been a respectful, loving conversation.
On my show I play a little game. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit rude, but I'll see. I think you'll be good at it. It's called Desert Island Dicks, and in this game I get you.
Sorry,
to...
Sorry, did you say Desert Island Dicks?
Yeah.
You don't just throw that in the conversation. Yeah. Oh,
I know. Every time I say dick, everyone like freaks out or looks at me like I've said something else and they're not sure if I've said dick or not. No, I did say dick.
No, that was a dick.
In this game, I get you to pick a track that you would absolutely hate to be stuck with on a desert island. Mm. And that is your Desert Island Dick. So, George the Poet, please, can you tell me what your Desert Island Dick would be?
I'm blue, dabba-dee-dabba-die, and dabba-dee-dab. I would feel like I'm in Hunger Games.
I mean, that would be horrendous. Imagine if you also had the video as well on replay.
It's Hunger Games. Tell me that's not like a round in Hunger Games where you have to find the off button.
Well, yeah, I think that is the next Hunger Games film, actually. Finding the off button on a desert island for Blue Dabba Dee Dabba Dye.
The Hannah Whitten Show on FUBAR Radio.
I've got Ash Haldell with me. Woo, 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 woo. Yay, hello. I'm so happy to be here.
You're American as well.
I know.
She came
that's
all
true.
The way from America to be on this show.
Just to see you and hang out with you, Hannah.
On this show, specifically.
To be on this show.
To be on the show. Okay, Ashley, are you ready for your favourite? Well, not your favourite. Well, it might be your favourite, but the most anticipated?
Yes, the most anticipated. I'm slightly nervous. I have never phone sex talked before. I think I tried once and it went poorly. But I'm all in. Yeah. And I'm ready.
I love your enthusiasm.
Okay. So it'll be weird.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Okay, good.
It's good if it's weird. So Ash and I are going to simulate phone sex. I'm going to call you up. And then I'm going to start talking dirty to you. And you're going to talk dirty back to me.
Okay.
What we have in front of us are three pieces of paper with words on them that we can't see. And during the conversation, we turn over them like one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever the word is on the piece of paper, we have to include in our dirty talk.
Are we trying to slip it in like unnoticed?
You can if you want, but it usually is pretty noticeable.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to call
you. Do we have like alter egos or are you still Hannah?
You can be whoever you want.
My name is Fred.
You gonna be Fred?
Yes.
Okay.
Fred is the sexiest name.
Happy Mindy.
This is going to be the most obnoxious phone sex you've
ever. Are you okay?
All right.
Bring, bring.
Bring, bring.
Bring, bring.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Fred, it's Mindy.
Oh, Mindy. My Mindy.
Oh, Fred. I was still thinking about you.
Mindy, where are you from?
Don't ask. It's fine. I, like, went to one of those international schools, so my accent's all over the place.
Ooh, I like girls like that.
Yeah.
It's a very niche thing, so I'm happy I found you.
Okay. Well, I was just... That's cool, I guess. Because I'm unique, you know? But, Fred, I was just thinking about you the other night and that cake that we ate.
Ooh.
And remember how you... got the cake in your hand and you just shoved it in my face.
Yes.
So into that.
Yes, I remember that. And then I licked it off your forehead and it was nice. So many marshmallows on that cake. Oh, I love them.
I just love how bouncy and they...
I bounced them right off your nipples, baby. It was fun.
We burnt them on the fire first, and so they melted all down my belly.
Ouchie. But we were safe about it, and nobody got hurt.
It was totally consensual, because I love you, baby. Fred.
Mindy, you're my little marshmallow Mindy. Oh, yum. Yum, yum, sweetness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But the thing, it was kind of funny though, because with burning all them marshmallows, we kind of like set the place on fire and we had to put gas masks on. But it don't matter, because you in a gas mask, Fred, was so sexy.
Ooh, yep.
I just love seeing you in that gas mask. And it was such a tease, because then I couldn't kiss you because we were both wearing gas masks.
Right, and we were running away from a fire, so we had other things to do.
Marshmallow fire. Oh, I have so many adventures with you, Fred.
Yes. But then, we a little bit of our gas masks caught on fire. So we had to put on our swimming goggles and jump in the neighbor's pool. Do you remember that, Mindy?
I remember it. Ugh. Oh, it was so weird.
It was the weirdest.
So weird. And the neighbors came out and they were like, "Where are your morals?"
And I said, "We don't have morals. We're cheap." And I'm in love with Mindy.
And I'm in love with you, Fred. Oh my god, and the song just ended there. That's perfect.
Was that unlike any other phone sex call you've had?
Well, it was the first time I had an accent that was slipping in and out of, like, generic American, Southern Belle, sometimes British.
And then just generally uncomfortable. You were just like, oh,
okay, Fred, yeah.
That's fine, okay. Moving on. Okay, I liked that. That was good. We can play that again.
My cheeks hurt from smiling so much. Why was I, like, being called Southern Belle? I think it's the whole, like, oh.
Because I'm a big, burly man. Yeah.
Uh-huh. God, gender norms. Just slipping right into everything. Oh. So you've never done the phone sex thing, or you have once before?
I've never done what?
The phone sex thing.
Mm-mm. I was long distance once, and I think that I, like, tried to initiate it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I'm pretty, well, yeah, anyway.
that thought train just derailed.
So, I, like, hinted at it. I was like, maybe we could try to be intimate. And they were like,
oh.
And I was like, well.
Come on, Fred.
You could call me. And
yeah, we already talked to each other on the phone.
Yeah, I know, but, like, we could... Never mind. So, like, because I think phone sex could be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I think real sex would be mo better. But when I was long distance, I was interested, but I think I felt pretty, like, shut down. And then, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
I don't know.
Each their own, eh?
Yeah. It wasn't meant to be anyway, so, like, whatever.
You're like, never mind. No phone sex for you, anyway.
Right. Exactly.
No phone sex, no regular sex.
Yeah, none of the sex.
No sexting.
How often do you have phone sex?
Like, that sounds like I'm about to be like weekly, no. I'm much more of a sexter.
Oh, okay.
So, like, in text form?
Sure.
Like, if someone got hold of my phone.
Oh, I send dirty pictures. Is that the same?
Yeah, that's a form of sexting.
Okay. I do that.
I like that.
I'm like trying to prove myself. I'm like, I'm wild. I'm sexy.
I like doing that, but I'm still, I don't know, because I'm not married.
Sure. That's good. That's really good.
It's the whole, guys, don't sext until you're married. But you know what I mean? It's like,
Grace is the first person I've sexted with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it wasn't really by choice. It was just because she was the first person to ever sext me.
Oh.
So
she was like, I just the initiator.
Reciprocated.
And you were just like, I'm into it.
Yeah.
I like it. But I think yeah, it's like, I will send underwear pictures because I'm like, I've posted a few underwear pictures on the internet anyway.
So that's what I mean by sexy pictures anyway.
I thought you were like, nude.
Oh, well.
Like, fully nude. Because if it was that, then I'm just like, head not in the picture.
Sure.
But I don't think there aren't really any of those that exist of me that I've sent.
I think topless is the most I go in a
picture.
I'll
be like, holding my boobs like this.
Sure.
And I'll be like, sexy. Uh-huh. I actually showed a picture of, like, a naked picture of myself, but my head isn't in, and I was, like, really proud of it, because I thought I looked really good, like, really cool in it. And I showed it to a bunch of my friends. Like, I didn't send it to them, but I was, like, physically putting my phone in their face, being like, can I show you my nudes? And they were like, sure! So I showed them this picture, and my friend Riyad, who is a gay man.
I know Riyad, yeah.
Yeah. His best compliment that he could give me on my female form was, you look so fertile. Which I love. I loved that. I look fertile.
What does that mean?
I think it was just like hips, tits.
Sure. Yeah, you know, womanly. Yeah.
It was just like, you could impregnate me.
Yeah.
I would hold a child.
That is a compliment.
I could carry a child in my stomach.
I can imagine that in Riyadh's voice.
Childbearing hips.
You look so fertile.
You look so fertile. No, not even try.
No. Fertile, yeah.
Fertile. Fertile Myrtle.
Yeah.
Johnny and Inel on Bar Radio.
We have been joined by our absolutely super sensational guest, Mr. Ian Sterling.
Hello. Hello. And we could have less, as a white man, we could have less race-based and I can actually get involved. That would be ideal.
Yeah, you were like, oh, is it all going to be on Bungo stuff?
I'm just sitting,
well, most of the show,
I'm just sitting in the corner hating my grandparents. That's all I'm doing.
Good stuff, good stuff. So, Mr. Ian Sterling, you are a super, super talented comedian.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Then
you're also a super talented voiceover man as well, aren't you?
I do voices on TV shows now. Yeah, I do a thing called Love Island.
Yeah, I watched that show. I actually ended up getting hooked on it.
Mate, I didn't know about it, and then when I got asked to do it, I was like, I'll just do it. And then after about day three, I was like, this is incredible, man.
Yeah.
I just got paid to watch people have sex and say sarcastic things.
Yeah. Do that anyway.
I would happily do that in my spare time. So yeah, it was good. I liked it. It was a good show.
I mean, are they auditioning for that part next year? Because I definitely could get
what,
paid
the voiceover
to
bit?
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
I'm not going to come out here and tout out work. I mean, I want to do it.
If anyone does want my gig,
who books that? I was a football show. Well, I didn't get paid, now I've not got a job.
Yeah, yeah. That's how we work at football. We strip your assets.
You're bailiffs. I don't know what
I mean, you've got a great voice though, man. Have you insured it yet? Have you got to that stage where you're like, I'm going to insure my voice?
I don't know if you can insure your voice.
You can insure your voice.
You can. Yeah. You
know,
can.
One thing I did get is, me and David Tennant are filming the same area.
Yeah.
So loads of people at the beginning were on Twitter going like, oh, David Tennant's career's going not well.
He's on Love Island, yeah, the Doctor Who.
Come on, his tax bill must have been big this year. Like, what is going on? So yeah, I get that a lot. And then also, I got a few comedians, when W1A came out, loads of comedians were like, oh mate, you were so good in the voice on W1A. And obviously I went, oh, thanks. Because yeah. I'm taking that, because that was a good show.
We'll take it as well, because guys, this has been awesome. We've managed to get our biggest guest so far, David Tennant, who's on the show. So yeah, don't ask us how we've done it.
Oh, we're getting a lot of Doctor Who, which is coming out right now.
Absolutely. That Love Island looked wicked. I saw you on there a few times as well, literally just seemingly having it large. You just would come on, say your bits, which were funny as well, and then you just...
I was... So, yeah, on a Thursday, I'd go on the live show, and I sat on a couch answered about three questions and then went and got drunk.
Perfect.
Ideal. Have you? I'll get paid to do that forever.
I do a similar thing in Wetherspoons, actually. I get asked questions by the police. And then they occasionally
questions let such
me
as, sir, can you please leave?
Yeah, and why have you soiled yourself? But yeah, all of those buzz questions. Now, the thing is, Ian, if you... you haven't been on the show so far, so you won't necessarily know that in this part of the show, when we do get guests on, we ask the big questions.
Mm-hmm.
The big questions, okay?
Big ones.
Absolutely, like, you know, to your root, to your core, okay? You ready to deal with that?
I think I'm ready. I read the Metro this morning.
Excellent.
I know about all the big issues.
He's done his own work.
bit of a wasted effort, actually. These are going to be mainly about your opinion on things. So,
there we go.
So, if you could have played any character in a TV show or film, which one would it be?
I would go with Bungle from Rainbow.
Oh.
Bungle. Right, okay.
Because you've got anonymity.
Right.
You get to wear a bear suit.
Right.
And you're like the character of a generation.
Right, okay. Okay. I was not expecting that, but I'm going to be honest.
Bungle.
I don't know, you could have been like, you know, I want to be Mad Max, or I want to be, you know, like Superman or something, but you've gone
don't
for...
Don't let him feel bad about his choice. He's made his choice.
I'm giving you the big answers to the big questions.
I want to be Bungle.
I'll be Bungle, thanks very much.
Fair play, Bungle.
And think, and then in about 20 years' time, you got an amazing photo with me with a suit on but no head. No, you see that sometimes.
Oh, that like destroys childhoods though.
No, like Darth Vader with his helmet on, the actor.
Yeah.
And I'd like that.
Oh, right. So you don't kind of want the fame of playing the part. You want to be unknown in the first place, and then...
I want to be unknown. I want to go about my business. I want to be able to be in a Wetherspoons, but then also be a...
Yeah.
A famous guy.
Do you just want to be someone whispering in the corner, that guy used to be Bungle. Now look at him, Bungle's let himself go.
Is it Jeff? Who's the guy the human in Rainbow?
Yeah, I think it was Jeff, wasn't
it? Yeah, he's a cab driver in London now. He's a black cab driver.
Oh, right.
I don't know if that's really interesting or tragic.
Yeah.
How did you find out? Was he in the back of his cab?
I know loads of people have been in his cab.
Oh, right.
So I don't know if I'd recognise him, to be fair.
I wouldn't. Yeah. What about the curtains? He had that bowl kind of haircut, didn't he? Like a mop.
I never really watched Rainbow, I can't be honest, guys. That's why I was stunned by Bungle as well. But there you go.
You thinking it was the pink one, weren't you?
Well, I do know that Zipper, yeah.
No, Zippy's one with
what
a zip.
What are you talking about? It's a bit of one with a zip.
Yeah.
The pink one's a peg or something.
Yeah.
Oh. George.
I'm massively out of my depth here. I can't believe I'm being shouted down.
Someone's asking the big questions and don't know the big answers.
The big rainbow answers, so fair enough.
Well, I've got one. I've got a big one.
A big question, I know.
Right. Big question. Back in the day,
right,
when you was a little man,
yes,
was you a Nintendo boy or a Sega boy?
Man. I was a Sega boy.
Is it?
Oh,
Sonic all the way, was it?
Sonic, because you didn't have to put the you didn't have to put the cartridge in and the game would play.
Yeah.
That blew my mind.
Yeah, that was cool.
I was like, there's no cartridge in this, but it's playing a game.
Was that the Master System?
What, Alex the Kid built in?
Oh, Alex the Kid. I was always a Sonic boy, so I never got the Alex the Kid built in, but I think I wanted Alex the Kid.
They did have a Sonic one as well, later on, yeah.
Yeah, see, I just came to it later. And I had, what was the one with it? You could be the red fighting guy and the blue fighting guy, and you walked through the levels.
Oh, the Smash Up Brothers or something, isn't it?
Smash TV.
It was, you're like ninjas. Oh, that was quality, that game.
Streets of Rage.
Streets of Rage.
Yeah.
What a game.
A and B
was a diving kick.
That was a wicked game.
That's a combo that you need to remember for life.
Flying
kick. A and B.
I remember when you were playing with a mate, and because you could only walk up and down, but you could get in the way of each other.
Yeah.
I'm trying to go down, bro. I'm trying to go down.
Yeah. Get in the way.
That's when you used to hold on to them if you touched each other, innit?
Those big sumo things came through the wall.
Yeah.
And if like four of them came out, you were like, what's the point? This is impossible.
Those were the days when you you could literally spend 9-10 hours trying to complete a game, you know, and that never, because you couldn't even save it at certain points in some of them games as well. No. You'd have to continually go through.
That was it, they're like Double Dragon and stuff. You had to finish it one sitting, otherwise that's it, start again.
I used to get my mates when I was near the end of a level, this is on the Sonic Tutor, I'd get them to leave the room so I could concentrate.
I've got to focus.
I like that.
And that's the sort of gap.
You know what? That's what I never got. It, Double Dragon, right? At the end of that game, because there were two brothers, and the whole game was that you had to rescue the girlfriend. And then you get to the end, and then you realise that the girl's going out with both of them, and so the brothers have to beat each other up as the last boss to see who wins the girl. And I was like, hold on, did they not just figure that out before that level one that they're both seeing the same girl?
They've had to go on seven levels of beating people,
fighting through all sorts of mob lines.
Also, they're like handsome buff karate chaps. That's why they just go, let's just go to a club.
Do you know what I mean?
Just get some new people. It's plenty of birds around these streets of Rage.
we've karate chopped half of them. I'm enjoying this banner. This is great banner for radio if you're aged between 25 and 35.
We're very niche.
We like to narrow our audience. So I've got another big question.
Big question.
Okay, if you could be reincarnated as any animal, would it be?
Oh, what? I'll take your time on that one.
Oh my, that is a big question.
Is the answer bungle again?
You know what? I was thinking that, and comedically, I left it too long to bring him in.
Whereas I picked up your pieces afterwards. Yeah. There you go. If he won't use it, I will.
That's how you're asking the big questions, and I'm answering. Yeah. I'm going to go with, I used to have them as kids, and I like them. I'd be a rat.
No, why? Really?
I love rats.
Yeah? Why a rat?
They're the cleanest of all the rodents.
Are they?
Yeah. You don't know that. They make great pets.
What, cleaner than, like, gerbils and...
Gerbils are disgusting. Guinea pigs are filth.
Really?
Honestly, man, they stink. Rats, clean. They're really clever.
I'm not believing this unless Attenborough told you this himself. Well,
I used to live in Richmond near David Attenborough's house.
Yeah. And this was a neighbour.
No, he was over the other. He was opposite me. This is on, like, so from my kitchen window, you could see he had a big window in his living room.
Yeah.
But he had loads of plants. So when he walked about his living room, it looked like you were watching David Attenborough.
Walking in the wild.
And I used to get really drunk and, like, do the voice for it. Like, going to get a cup of tea.
I think I would imagine that David Attenborough lives with lions in his house and stuff like that.
Honestly, there's loads of, like, the sort of like potted palm trees and stuff around it. So it looked like he was mad.
Wow.
How does he look after them? He's always away. Them plants should be dead by the time he gets back.
He's not away that much now, though, is he?
No. Yeah. Nah. Bless him.
Rat.
You go with rat.
I want to be a rat.
And when you say rat, you had pets as rats, were they like your actual pets or they just ran in the house?
No, you gave them names like Michael Jackson. I didn't live in London when I was a kid.
Oh, okay. Oh, a bit of London abuse there. Okay.
No, I had them in a... You keep them in a fish tank.
Oh, right.
And that's where you keep them. Yeah. With a mesh.
With water filled up, swimming for their lives constantly.
I can't get out of the top.
you drain the fish tank.
Oh, right. Okay.
Bang them in. Bit of gravel. Bit of hay for them to make a bed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Absolutely. David Attenborough showed him that.
Loads of toys, because, like I said, they're very intelligent, so you need to give them things to do.
Oh, that's cool.
I didn't know.
Honestly, man, rats are class. I can't recommend them enough.
I have a theory.
You say I'm in the friend zone, is it?
Right, yeah. So you get all the ladies there, Ian. Come round and see my rats.
James Acaster on Fubar Radio.
We're going to be putting our iPods on shuffle. Matthew Crosby and I. Matthew Crosby, hello.
Hello.
As usual, I'll go first to take the first plunge. So here we go. Oh. Saint Pepsi.
Saint Pepsi?
Yeah. Oh, here we go.
St. Pepsi, I said there, like it was a
like at the tube station.
Yeah, like it was a tube.
King's Cross and Pepsi.
King's Cross and Pepsi.
That was, we were really entering the chill out zone there, weren't we?
I mean,
we
started out, and that album, I was saying to you, that album is really upbeat. Like, it's really cheesy dance tunes all the way, and like a really fun album. And that is the one song.
That's your cool down afterwards.
That is the one song that's just like.
Is it mid album or is it at the end? Does it end?
Yeah, I think that's like track 7.
Really?
You know, like after a bit, maybe before an interlude. There's a little interlude, I remember, that's like just some vocal song. It's a sample clearly off a film. Oh, here we go. You will probably know this. So okay, I can run it by you.
Let's give it a go.
So it's. Now, I thought the dialogue sounded it was from a Woody Allen film or something, but it might not be.
Okay.
But it's someone, and they're clearly shopping for engagement rings for their girlfriend with her, and it's like this one, I love this one.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying. And actually, do you know what? I could just find
it. Let's find it, and we'll
I'll
see.
I'll find
if we
it
can...
on my iPod.
I'm trying to think of what Woody Allen film would have for shopping for engagement rings.
Yeah. I don't know if
everyone says, I love you, maybe. Might be.
What's I haven't heard of that one. He does a film every year, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And some of them are fine. And some of them are awful, but very few of them are sort of the classic 70s Woody Allen. Very few of them are Annie Hall. I mean, one of them is Annie Hall.
One of them definitely was Annie Hall.
Yeah, one of them is definitely Annie Hall.
We can't deny
that. Manhattan is very nearly Annie Hall, but it's not.
I've not seen Manhattan.
Oh, it's a corker.
I've seen Annie Hall a number of times, but not ever seen Manhattan.
So. Annie Hall, sitcom fans, was the inspiration behind Peep Show.
Was it?
The scene where they've got the subtitles at the bottom, that's what Jesse and Sam saw and thought, yeah, we could do that, but a sitcom.
Ah.
So we go bringing it back
Matthew
to sitcoms.
Cosby knows everything about sitcoms.
That's a show I'm pitching a FUBAR
Radio. Just called that.
Just me talking about sitcoms.
Welcome to Matthew Cosby Knows Everything About Sitcoms. Today, ask me about sitcoms. Imagine if every week you did a show where you got interviewed. So the guest was always the person interviewing you.
That's a great idea.
And it was always on you. Amanda, that's a new show idea. Please write that down.
Got a thumbs up there.
New show idea is that the same person gets interviewed every week.
That's a great idea.
And it'd just be called the Matthew Cosby Show.
I mean, in many ways, that is the Comedian's Comedian podcast, isn't it? Because effectively, Stu is asking them to interview him.
Really?
That's kind of it, isn't it? You learn more about Stu as the weeks go on than you do about the acts.
You do learn a lot about him. And everyone, listen to the Comedian's Comedian podcast.
It's a cracking podcast.
Matthew and myself are interviewed on it, or we interview Stu, depending on
how you take it. I've realised now that my Edinburgh procrastination is listening to, I feel like I'm doing work.
Yeah.
If I listen to John Gordillo being interviewed, that's kind of the same as writing material, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it isn't.
Because I'll feel inspired. It's like I've been watching Chef's Table on Netflix, documentary series about chefs, and it's kind of like that, because that is quite inspiring about how creative they are with their dishes and stuff like that, and how they really, it's all about how they struggle to get where they are, and more about the chefs and the food. And you do watch it and you come out going, I really like that line about how you've just got to keep on pushing yourself about what in the meantime, all I've done all day is watch documentaries and not done anything.
Well, it seems, it's like, if I watch stuff on Netflix, as opposed to just, dicking around on the internet, I feel like I'm being productive.
Yeah.
That's a modern thing.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Absolutely. Stuff like, oh, I'll tell you what is getting me annoyed at the minute.
What's that?
Have you seen these adverts on the tube for Mubi, it's called? MUBI?
Yes, I've seen those adverts.
Furious about them.
Why?
What kind of an idiot? For those of you who haven't seen the advert,
they pick a movie for you.
They pick a movie every day.
Yeah.
And it's there for 30 days and then it goes.
Yeah.
And you pay £5 a month.
To have a bespoke movie recommended to you by the experts.
Awful. Awful. Netflix has so many movies on it.
I know, it is bad. And actually,
and they don't disappear after 30 days. And it's only a couple of quid extra than this movie thing. And also, on the posters, it's all the films they're doing is Old Boy. I've seen Old Boy. And it's on Netflix, actually.
Yeah.
Amelie. So that's not.
You're not. Yeah. It's a bit like when you went
to Donnie Darko or something like that. Everyone knows that they're interested in films.
Well, it's the first week of university where you would meet someone who'd go, I'm actually into music you haven't heard of. I like Jeff Buckley. Everyone likes Jeff Buckley, get over yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
You might have been the interesting guy at your school who liked Jeff Buckley, but everyone likes him.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're like. They're going, hey, have you watched Amelie? Yeah, everyone watched Amelie.
Yeah, that big, massive studio release.
Yeah, we all saw that.
Of course we did.
So, that's annoying. There's no one signed up to it. I'm sure they're a bunch of nice small-time businessmen. Don't get a movie.
Yeah, just have a friend.
Yeah.
Chat to, just talk to a friend and say, what have you seen recently that you've enjoyed?
Yeah.
Get them to recommend it.
Watch that and don't have it for just 30 days. That's the thing. It's only for 30 days. For $5.99, you can just buy a DVD.
Yeah, but you couldn't buy 30 DVDs, which is effectively what they're doing.
You couldn't buy 30 DVDs, that's right. But...
but I mean, who's honestly watching 30 films a month?
Who's gonna watch a film every day?
I'm not a shut-in.
No.
I've got a life.
Yeah, as we've already discussed about how much you listen to Comedian's Comedian. Here's the St. Pepsi track.
Okay,
and we'll see if
let's go for it.
It swings any bells. Here we go. It's called Interlude, which is a good name, isn't it? Interlude, here we go.
Simple but elegant,
exactly.
Like this one.
Oh my god, that's beautiful. That is beautiful. That's the most beautiful thing I ever saw.
Thank you.
So what is that gonna cost me? I like it.
$55,000.
$55,000, you said. Well, let me take this off then, because I don't think it actually, as I look at it, it's really to Skylar's taste. It's kind of tacky. I mean, she's not a mafia bride. Will you help me out?
Well, he is a lovely one.
I think I got it. Everyone Says I Love You.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
What is that going to cost me?
Is that Edward Norton speaking there?
$8,000. Oh, it might be, actually.
If it's Edward Norton, I think it is Everyone Says I Love You.
That sounds like Norton, doesn't it?
Well,
but it sounds like Norton doing a Woody Allen impression.
Yeah, because every lead character in a Woody Allen movie has to basically do an impression of him. I reckon 95% certain that's Everyone Says I Love You. We can Google it in a second.
That does sound about right. That sounds like Ed Norton.
I think Edward Norton. I think he's getting married to Drew Barrymore.
Lovely.
Because it was his musical. Back when musicals weren't, you know, they were right. Obviously enjoying a resurgence now. But Woody Allen was like, no one makes musicals anymore. I'm going to make a musical and I'm going to cast people who I like but can't necessarily sing or dance. So it's really good because all Edward Norton can't sing or dance,
yeah,
but does his best job doing it.
Yeah.
The only person who wouldn't sing for the film was Drew Barrymore.
Okay.
And so he dubbed her voice with someone else who couldn't sing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She wouldn't sing because she thought her voice was too bad. He's like, well, I'm just going to get someone else who can't sing.
How do you like that?
Yeah. You know.
Trivia for you.
Yes.
Le Miserable. No, not Le Miserable. Sweeney Todd, the Tim Burton
The
film.
Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Yeah. So the Tim Burton one. When they were filming it, they were all singing to their pre-recorded tracks. They'd all recorded the vocals already and they were miming along to it, apart from one person for one song, and he went behind Tim Burton's back to sort it out. As well, he went to the sound, my friend worked on the sound crew,
really,
so this guy went round and said, don't put my song on, I'm just gonna actually sing it, I'm gonna properly do it. And that was Sacha Baron Cohen.
Really?
Yeah he did he's the only one who actually sang like live on the set.
That's great.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Why did he do that? Why did he not want to? Because he wanted to make it.
I think he just wanted to be in it in the moment and properly do it and deliver the.
Well, it works. It works perfect because he's also in Les Mis as well.
He
and
is,
that's
yeah.
what they did in Les Mis. They made them sing live.
Yes.
Sort of. Yeah. Rather than
maybe that's why he got the part in Les Mis. Who knows?
It was his audition tape.
They were like, he already did it. He's the only one who's already done it.
He's got the skills.
He actually originated this style of
singing live.
Yeah, singing live.
I don't think he did.
No one's ever sung live before Cohen.
No, he was the guy. He was. That's why he's playing Freddie Mercury in this movie.
Yeah.
Because he invented live singing.
Were you optimistic about that, Freddie Mercury?
Well, I mean, I don't. I like Queen up to a point, but I'm not. I don't think they are the band that, you know. I don't have a sort of Kenny Everett love of Queen, you know. And he played when the day Bohemian Rhapsody came out. He played it three times.
Great,
yeah, on his show. He couldn't believe it. And that's most of the show done, isn't it? Come on, Kenny Everett, it's pull your finger out. But yeah, no. So I think it will be. I think fascinating stories.
Yeah,
dwarves with cocaine on their heads.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely horrifying, but kind of compelling.
Yeah, but it's the kind of stories you want to hear.
Yeah, and he didn't, because Sacha Baron Cohen left for a while, left the production because he wanted to take it one way, and then the estate wanted to be a bit more sort of loving, and now he's back on. He may even be directing it now.
Really?
But I think so.
Imagine that. Sorry. You walk away from a project and then you get to run the whole thing.
This is what he does.
That's clever.
He calls people's bluff.
Yeah. We should all be. We should all I be don't Sasha think Baron it'd Cohen. Work out for me if I call people's bluff all the time.
Yeah, I think if I walked on projects, they'd go fine. Yep. Great, we'll get
see you later.
Else.
We're gonna get Chico in. Oh, that is a joke.
That's a reference to something we were talking about before the show began.
Off air. Right, we're gonna put Matthew Crosby's iPod on shuffle now. Let's see what the first song is. Oh, Jimmy Eat World.
Oh, Jimmy Eat World. What a classic. Lead American.
If you were with me tonight, I'd sing to you just one more time. A song for a heart so big, God wouldn't let it live. May angels lead you.
Jimmy Eat World, hear you me.
Not a dry eye. Not a dry eye in the studio.
In the country.
Yeah, so again, we were saying this.
Yeah.
Quite a relaxed song, quite a sort of chill out song for quite an upbeat album.
It is a dancey album.
You know, by the way, do stop me if I'm just being... Because this is... It's because I haven't really seen anyone this weekend.
Yes.
You're the first person I've seen. So I'm just going to keep dropping bits of meaningless trivia at you.
I think you know me well enough now to know that that is exactly why I got you on the show, Cosby.
So, originally the album was called Bleed American.
Yes.
Then they changed the name.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
No, and I didn't know they changed it. I always...
They retitled it the eponymous Jimmy Eat World. They just called it
Yeah, because I was always just like, I don't know what that album's called because I had heard two different... Yeah.
And now it's back to being called Bleed American. Like, if you look it up on Spotify, it's called Bleed American. Weirdly, they thought it was post-9/11. It was a post-9/11 thing.
Right.
A bit like they took off on the re-release of Is This It? They took off New York City Cops.
Right, okay.
Because everyone loved the Cops so much. They thought maybe putting, you know, maybe invoking blood in America together might be a problematic
right.
song.
Jimmy Eat World
Jimmy
there.
Jimmy Eat World there.
Thinking
very sensitive.
That they're emo fans. I don't know, sure. That is the one place you don't want to, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
The emo kids probably would kick off about
I mean,
that.
they're on the verge of tears anyway.
Yeah.
So don't, yeah.
No need to put that kind of imagery in their head.
I got into a big emo phase. Big emo fan. Not the kind of like My Chemical Romance or the bands that are sort of described as emo.
Yeah.
Which I really can't. But then, I've got no time for.
So you were like me then, because like, we were like, we liked what we considered emo.
Yeah.
Jimmy Eat World and the Get Up Kids and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then when My Chemical Romance were like all over MTV and people were saying, this is emo, we were like, this is not emo.
No. But emo is not wearing long fingerless gloves that are purple and black striped.
Yeah.
And a bit of eye makeup. It's actually, I used to go to gigs that were like local emo bands would play in Canterbury when I was at university. And it was genuinely, they were all about like, they would play songs, like, incredibly emotive, like weepy songs, and then they would pass the microphone around the room and people could tell like sad stories.
Yeah,
it was incredible. They were incredible gigs. Also, like, people would grab the microphone and go, my mum is a smoker and I'm really worried about her, and then pass the microphone. It was brilliant.
Back Row and Chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
We're about to speak to the Emmy award winning film and television stage veteran actor Joe Morton. Where are you in the world at the moment, Joe?
I'm in the Marina Del Rey in California.
Cali.
Marina Del Rey. I shot Star Trek Into Darkness out there. Very nice area.
Is that right?
Yeah, really nice white beach, yeah. I was the first 10 minutes that blew up everything before Benedict came and took everything over.
So, Joe, one of the most watched television shows is Scandal.
And you played the nefarious Rowan.
How did you get involved with Scandal at the very, very beginning?
No, season two. I'm assuming as an actor, an audition, or were you offered the role originally?
It's a very funny story. I came out to L.A. for pilot season. I had, of course, heard of Scandal, but never had an occasion to watch it. Watched the first season on Netflix. After seeing it, just fell in love with it. Thought, oh, this would be wonderful. I could figure out a way to get on the show for an episode or two.
Yeah.
And before I even had a chance to talk to my agent or my manager about trying to do that, I got a call from them saying that Scandal wanted to talk to me about coming onto the show.
Nice.
And when I spoke to producer Scandal, they made it clear that if I decided to take the role, that at the end of season two, the last two lines would be, "Hello, Olivia, hi, Dad." And I said, yes, that sounds great. I'll take the job.
Wow, fantastic.
Oh, my God.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much, Joe, for calling in. Hope you have a lovely day. Rest of the day. Not sure what time it is
Thank
in
you,
California.
Sir. And continue being an inspiration for all of us. You are a genius.
Thank you.